Good morning, everyone. As you can see, Geshe Galik is not here. He's with the serious meditators out at the retreat at Nolan's Farm. So I'm going to be leading the discussion this morning. And he's also going to be out of town for the next several months. So we'll have a variety of people sitting up here on Sunday mornings leading the discussion. Let me just get a sense of, do you have anyone who's here for the very first time this morning? Okay, great. Glad to have you. And this will be very much a discussion today. But we'll begin with saying our prayers. Let's see. We'll start with the four immeasurables at the top of the beige page, in the prayer book. We'll read the four immeasurables. Then we'll skip down to the bottom and read refuge and bodhicitta together three times. And then on the next page, we'll read the seven limb prayer and the short mandala offering. Okay. But we'll begin by saying Shakyamuni Buddha's mantra seven times. Taya ta om mune mune maha mune soha. 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 May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. And the seven limb prayer. Reverently I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering, actual and imagined. I declare all my negative actions accumulate since beginningless time, and rejoice in the merit of all holy and ordinary beings. Please remain until the end of cyclic existence, and turn the wheel of Dharma for living beings. I dedicate my own merits and those of all others to the great enlightenment. Short mandala offering. This ground anointed with perfume, strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Meru, four continents and the sun and the moon. I imagine this as a Buddha field and offer it. May all living beings enjoy this pure land. Okay. And we'll begin with some meditation. Is everybody here? Had some experience with meditation. I don't think we need to review the posture. We'll begin with the nine-round breathing that Geshe-la has introduced us to. Helps settle the mind, helps us become a little bit more focused. And then we'll follow that with a period of just paying attention to our breath. If I don't get a bell to ring, we'll start and we'll never stop. So we don't, yeah. Okay. So I'll begin by checking your posture, starting with your head and working down. I think most people are familiar with it at this point. Now use the right hand to close the left nostril. Take three deep breaths in and out through the right nostril. Then we close the left nostril, three deep breaths on that side, and then three deep breaths in and out through both nostrils. And now we allow our breathing to return to its normal pattern. And we simply place the mind, our awareness, on the movement of the breath in and out through the nostrils. Nothing more, nothing less than that. Mind perceiving breath. And every time we notice that our mind has wandered off, as it inevitably will, we gently lead it back and put it on the breath again. Very simple, but in some ways a very difficult meditation. So have some patience with yourself. And you may relax your concentration. My name's Robbie Watkins. For people who don't know me, I'm a member of Kadampa Center, and I was one of those who was drafted by Geshe Gelug and Sarah to lead the Sunday discussions. In Geshe-la's absence, it's going to be a rotating cast of people up here, so you'll get a lot of different perspectives on the Dharma, I think. In his absence, Geshe-la has asked us to discuss the 16 guidelines. Is anyone here familiar with this to some degree? It's really, I hope Denise Flohr is here for the second session because she was very involved in this. But the 16 guidelines are not an actual teaching of the Buddha, though they are based on the teachings of the Buddha. The Buddha, as far as we know, never gave a teaching called the 16 guidelines. But apparently, what little I know, in the 7th century, when Buddhism was quite new in Tibet, and it really wasn't officially a Buddhist country, though the teachings had started to come from India over the mountains to Tibet, Tibet was still a fairly warlike and fierce place, and there is a king named Songtsen Gampo, I don't think his name is important, who was very dissatisfied with the way things were going in Tibet and organized the teachings, organized the 16 guidelines as a model for what he thought would be a more positive direction for the country of Tibet to take, based on respect and kindness for others primarily, and is really the beginning of Tibet becoming a more thoroughly Buddhist country and kind of adopting that peaceful attitude that they've had ever since. So as the guidelines were first put together in the 7th century. I don't have any more dates than that. And then in 2003, Lama Zopa Rinpoche, and let's see, there's a picture of him with His Holiness there on the right of the altar. That's Lama Zopa to the right, who's the spiritual director of the FPMT, the organization that we're part of, said that the 16 guidelines would be something very good to use in the FPMT centers, particularly in the children's and in the young people's programs. And he thought it is something that we should incorporate into our study, even though it's not an actual teaching of the Buddha. And Lama Zopa at that time said, this is a quote from him, "Something like this is very practical. The minute you follow the guidelines, your life will change. They help you to respect other people and stop harming them." So that's pretty impressive. So there have been a number of conferences where students from the FPMT have come together to develop a curriculum around the 16 guidelines. And this is a book that's for sale in the bookstore if you're interested in following up on a little bit more. But it's a very, it's, you know, they've never mentioned the Buddha or anything like that. It's very kind of a non-religious approach to the basic principles of Buddhism. It's just 16 guidelines that anyone, regardless of their religious background, I think could find useful. So I'm going to do a general introduction to them and talk about the first four today is my understanding if I look at the schedule. Yeah, and next week Venerable Lama will be leading the discussion, and she'll talk on, yeah, okay. Just getting my marching orders there. Let's see. So, being a Tibetan Buddhist, it's a list, of course. If you're at all familiar with Tibetan Buddhism, you know there are all sorts of the fours of this and the tens of that. And this is the 16s. And let's see. Let me get my notes. I certainly don't have them memorized. They're divided into four main categories. Is anybody familiar with those? Does anybody remember what they were? Okay. First one is called is How We Think. It's the first category. Second category is How We Act. And the third category, how we relate to others. And the fourth is how we find meaning. Okay, so I'll go back and then fill in all these, and then we'll talk about a little more detail. Under how we think, we have humility, patience, contentment, and delight. Under how we act, we have kindness, honesty, generosity, and right speech. How we relate to others, we have respect, forgiveness, gratitude, and loyalty. And then under meaning, we have aspiration, principles, service, and courage. Okay. So, not much to object to there, is it? And obviously very non-denominational, something that I think could be, that any spiritual tradition would align with. But this is particularly what the children and young people's program here at Kadampa Center bases their curriculum on. So it's a list of 16 points, and just is anybody familiar with the 10 non-virtuous actions? Anybody heard that teaching? Okay. I'm going to kind of contrast. I think this makes an interesting contrast. The Buddha definitely talked about the 10 non-virtuous actions, and in Buddhism we're taught that everything we think, everything we say, everything we do is an action and has karmic consequences, makes a karmic imprint on our mind that we will experience in the future. So the Buddha said there are 10 actions to avoid if you want to avoid creating negative karma. And he divided them up. So this is the 16 here. This is the 10 over here. Just as a contrast. Okay, the actions of body that he recommended we avoid, not because he said so, but he said these will cause problems for you later in your life. Does anybody know what those are? Yeah, avoid. These are things to avoid. Killing, stealing. What else? What's the third one? Nobody likes to remember this one. Sexual misconduct. Oh, everybody, okay. Which generally is defined as having sex with someone else's partner or in a way that has hurt someone, either physically or emotionally. Okay, body. Then the ones of speech. Anybody know what those are? Lying. Divisive speech. Idle gossip, yeah, and there's one in between. Harsh speech, yeah. And then the ones of mind are, anybody remember those? There are a couple before that. Anger or ill will. Attachment. Clinging. And then ignorance, which doesn't mean not being well educated, but not seeing reality as it is directly. So the Buddha said, if you don't want to suffer in the future, it's generally a good idea to avoid doing these, okay? The ones of body being the easiest ones to avoid, okay? I mean, we still kill insects, but we can, you know, we can not steal. We can make that a practice, try to avoid killing, sexual misconduct. Speech, much harder, okay? Lying, divisive speech, speech that separates people, harsh speech, overly critical, idle gossip means, I mean, you can't, of course you can sit around and shoot the breeze, but just wasting your lifetime in just meaningless talk. Those are a little bit harder to avoid. The ones of the mind, very difficult to avoid. Okay, so the Buddha said, generally start here. These are the ones you can work with first, okay? If you avoid doing these, the chances are very good that you will not suffer in the future. If you continue to do these, which is completely your choice, you will suffer in the future. According to the Buddha's teachings on karma, these actions inevitably, definitely lead to your own suffering in the future. They may cause other people to suffer, we don't know, but they definitely will cause problems for you in the future. So if you don't want to suffer, avoid the 10 non-virtues. Okay, the 16 guidelines are a little bit different. These are not things to avoid, these are things to do. If you want to be happy, do these things, okay? So practice humility, patience, contentment, delight, and we'll talk about what those mean. Kindness, honesty, generosity, right speech, respect, forgiveness, gratitude, loyalty, aspiration, principle, service, courage. Okay, these create positive karma that lead to happiness. Avoiding these, we avoid suffering. Doing these, we create karmic imprints that inevitably will lead to our own happiness. They may make other people happy, we don't know. But these actions will lead to our own happiness, according to the Buddhist teachings. So what this whole, I've used this, I know people have heard this before, as Venerable Rabina defines this side, things to avoid, zip your lips and keep your hands to yourself, okay? But this whole thing is basically about not harming others. That is the goal. If we avoid these and practice these, we're not harming others. And that's the first major section of the Buddhist path, okay? Don't harm others, okay? His Holiness the Dalai Lama frequently says, as much as you can, help others. But if you can't do that, at least avoid harming others. And that's Buddhist ethics. The ethical basis of Buddhism is to avoid harming. And that's really the whole first section of the path, is learning how to avoid actions that harm others and do actions that we know will not harm others. Okay? Any comments or questions so far? Yeah. I'm not going to talk about that one today, okay? I'll read what it says in the book. I didn't prepare that one, but it generally means, let's see what, again, this is going to be a very non-Buddhist definition. Let's see what they say in here. Let's see, hold on just a second. 64. Right speech is a commitment to use words skillfully in a way that will bring peace and happiness to ourselves and the people around us. It is about using our speech to take away fear, to bring hope, to make people laugh and feel close to one another. This is how we share who we are. So that's kind of a vague definition, but yeah, it's primarily avoiding these, okay? Yeah. So these are kind of, to start, you know, they're organized a different way in that they're not organized around body, speech, and mind, but you can find the opposite of most of these somewhere in here, okay? So this is Buddhist ethics. That's all Buddhist ethics is to avoid harming others. Yeah, Jeff. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So is there merit here?
No, that's the next subject I was getting ready to talk about. Yeah, merit. Because that's a word that we use a lot that we never, there's, I think a lot of people, including myself, are unclear about what merit really means. So I'll get to that in just a minute. Yeah. Things not to do, things to do. Buddhist ethics. Not harming others. Creating a place where others can feel safe. That's a word that's often used in this context. So that people feel safe around you. They know that you're not going to attack them, that you're not going to harm them. That's one of the great gifts we can give others according to the Buddha. We can give them material offerings. We can give them the gift of the Dharma. And we can give them the gift of a sense of safety when they're around us. So that's a wonderful thing to do for other people according to the Buddha. So Jeff brought up this idea of merit. How many people have heard that term used before in Buddhism? You know, we're told we're supposed to accumulate merit, which kind of implies if we accumulate enough of it, we'll get a merit badge, right? The Buddhism merit badge. And it's, I've been confused about what merit is. Myself a lot of times. Does anybody know the definition? Can anybody explain what merit is? And how it's different from good karma? That's where I get confused. Anybody want to take a stab at it? Yeah. Okay, that's getting close according to what I read, because I had to read up a little bit on this. But we're told we're supposed to accumulate merit, build up a store of merit.
Okay.
Anybody know what the definition of karma is? What is karma? What does that word mean? Action, okay? So karma is the actions. Everything of body, speech, and mind. Everything we do, everything we say, everything we think is a karma. It can be said to be a karma, is an action, okay? And there's good karma, which is defined as positive, or it leads to happiness. Negative karma leads to suffering. Very simple, okay? So karma is really the actions, the things that we do. By doing good karma, good actions, we create merit. And place I always like to go when I'm confused about these things is a site on the web called the Alex Berzin Archives. Alex, and his last name is Berzin. He's been here to Kadampa Center a couple times, and he's one of the foremost Western scholars of Tibetan Buddhism, and he has this tremendous website where you can look up anything you ever want to know about Buddhism, and whatever topic you'll look up, he'll start by saying the word we're using is a very poor translation from the Tibetan, which is kind of so he has to come up with a better translation. So his translation of merit is positive potential. Or positive force. By doing good actions, we create a positive potential. We have the potential, particularly for happiness, the potential for helping others. He says merit is something that arises as the result of acting constructively, and which then ripens into happiness. Yeah. Something that arises as a result of acting constructively, which would be all those 16 guidelines, all of those would be considered to be acting constructively, and which then ripens into happiness. Okay? So happiness, according to the Buddha, is not something that just falls out of the sky. It's not that we just get lucky or that we're just born happy or unhappy. Happiness is something that we have to create the potential for by performing good actions, avoiding negative actions. We create merit, which eventually will ripen into happiness. Okay? Good actions, good karma will lead to our own happiness. Now, it doesn't look like that all the time. He goes on to say that this ripening process, the way he says, this is a great phrase. He says it's nonlinear and chaotic. Because we all know where we've done something very kind and it just blows up in our face or just makes a mess of things. But according to the Buddha, if your motivation and your action is kindness, gratitude, whatever, at some point in the future, it will ripen into happiness. May not seem intuitively obvious right away, but it inevitably will ripen into happiness. Okay? So merit is building up this potential that can ripen into happiness, that will ripen into happiness. So that's what we're doing when we're accumulating merit. Okay? We're creating something that will lead to our future happiness. Did we go say something? Yeah. You look like you had something. Okay. Yeah. Questions, comments. Yeah.
When we do mantras and prayers and prostrations,
if it's done with the right motivation, yeah. It's if it's done, you know, so that you, with the motivation I'm doing this to improve my mind so that I can be a better benefit to others, to make impressions on my mind, that's considered accumulating merit. Okay. What's a more, we may not get to happiness right away. That may take a while, even several lifetimes if we believe in that. Does anybody know the more immediate way that merit ripens, that this potential can ripen? Anybody want to take a guess at it? According to the Buddha, it ripens as being so that we get the circumstances conducive for gaining insight into the Dharma. Okay? The fact that we have a Buddhist center with a fully qualified teacher like Geshe Gelug practically in our own backyards is a result of the merit that we've accumulated or that we've come into contact with that. Okay. So that we get circumstances conducive for gaining insight into the Dharma. Dharma being the anything that separates us from suffering. But more specifically, the teachings of the Buddha. So the fact that we have all these wonderful teachers here and we have a mind that can come and understand what they're saying to some degree and we have an interest in meditation, that's the result of merit that we've accumulated in the past. It's not just random. No?
Could you revisit what you said about intent and motivation?
Yeah. I mean, your actions of body, speech, and mind, there's the motivation, and then there's the actual action. And for most of us, they're usually quite mixed. And, you know, don't beat yourself up about that. You know, even when we're doing something very generous, there may be a little bit of wanting to look good in it. Or we can speak harshly, but we can do it out of kindness. So they're both important. The motivation, though, being more important than the actual action. But generally, it's quite mixed. in determining the karmic effect. Well, an action of generosity, of giving, that's done without any regret, without any attachment, but completely purely, is going to have a stronger karmic effect than one that's given out of a mixed motivation. I ain't giving, but a little bit, I don't really want to give. I'm giving because it's going to make me look good. That's going to be mixed. It's not going to have as strong a karmic effect.
So if something is done out of good intent,
yeah,
will a good result arise?
If your motivation is good, yes, it will lead to happiness for you in the future. Okay. Yes, exactly, yes. You know, may not be visible anytime soon. Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, we see things happen around us all the time and in our own lives where people think they have a good intent or, you know, and I'm just wondering.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that clear? Good,
yeah.
Good
it, that is definite. There is no variability, but it's not necessarily immediately visible. It's chaotic and nonlinear. But according to the Buddha, you cannot do a good action. It is impossible for a good action to lead to your own suffering, to cause suffering for you. Okay. Yeah. Any other questions or comments? Okay. So. Well, no, short-term suffering is the result of some other action. It's not the result of that action. Just because there's a temporal relationship, yeah, suffering cannot come from a good action. Suffering has to come from one of those non-virtues. Okay, so it's non-linear. Yeah, very important to realize that. Okay. Any other comments? Okay, so people have a sense of what we're talking about when we're talking about merit now. Positive potential. Okay, that will ripen into happiness. Okay, and it's a result of good karma. If we follow the 16 guidelines, we're going to, if you just lived your life according to those, all the time you'd create an incredible amount of good karma just in this one lifetime. Yeah, Jeff.
So, Robbie, just to summarize what I understood you to say about the short-term effect, maybe the one we could see.
Mm-hmm.
Even in this lifetime,
yeah,
we would be creating the conditions to see, to have some insight that we've realized, we've maybe had a small realization of the teaching.
Yeah.
Even if there's some meanness or whatever the chaos and the linearity is, what the short term is, we create the conditions to see.
Mm-hmm. And to come into contact with the teachers. And to have time to meditate and all of that.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. So that's kind of putting the guidelines into a bigger perspective. I wanted to just talk briefly about each of the first four, the ones on how we think. Let's see if I got them out of order. Yeah. Okay. Humility. Anybody want to take a stab at defining humility?
Absence of pride and ego.
That's pretty good. Anybody else?
Actually,
yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Okay. So the question was, define humility, and the answer was absence of pride and ego. According to the textbook, humility is the attitude of experiencing the world and what it contains with wonder and awe. It is about seeing ourselves as a small part of a vast cosmos inhabited by people and creatures from whom we can learn. Okay? So I think that last part is important, the sense that we can learn from others. That we don't know at all. Quiet strength. A person with humility can see beyond their own viewpoint and interests. They acknowledge that we are all dependent on others and that we have unique and sometimes unexpected roles to play in each other's life. Humility shifts our perspective from me, this is what you were saying, to others, and is delighted to do so. And then they always give a couple quotes after each one. One from a Greek philosopher. It is impossible for a man to learn what he thinks he already knows. And then from Galileo. I never met a man so ignorant that I couldn't learn something from him. Okay. So humility. Yeah, it's not all about me. I don't know it all. Okay?
The last one sounds kind of Mark Twain-ish.
Yeah, the Galileo, that folksy philosopher. Yeah, maybe it's Will Rogers who said that. I don't know. Here's another one. When you think you're green, you'll grow. When you think you're ripe, you begin to get rotten. From unknown. Okay. Patience. That's one that maybe people are more familiar with in a Buddhist context. What's patience?
Opposite of anger?
Yeah, I mean, it's traditionally referred as the... technical Buddhist term, it's the antidote to anger. Let's see, I saw a hand back here. Somebody want? Yeah, okay. Yeah, what else? Okay, let's see what they say here. Patience is the ability to control our reactions and retain our peace of mind. It gives us the flexibility and strength not to be a victim of circumstance. I'm reading out of the book here. Yeah, I just Xeroxed some of it out there. It doesn't make us passive or resigned or take away the ability to respond appropriately to difficulties and harm. On the contrary, patience makes it far more likely we can respond in an appropriate way. And His Holiness the Dalai Lama says, many people think that to be patient is a sign of weakness. I think that is a mistake. It is anger that is a sign of weakness. Okay. Yeah, so in Buddhism, patience and anger are presented as opposites very clearly. Okay. Contentment. Anybody want to take a stab at contentment? Yeah. Being satisfied with what you have. Thank you. Okay. Yeah, Chris is getting his exercise. Okay, now somebody on this side of the room say something. We'll run him back, and then somebody in the back, somebody in the front. Yeah, we'll let Chris practice patience. It's finding a point of stillness within ourselves which allows us to be quietly happy whenever, whatever our situation might be, and to be at peace with who we are. And basically, the Buddhist definition of happiness is being contented in a way that you wish to experience it again. So contentment and happiness are very closely related in Buddhism.
What about...
Oh, that's why. Here he comes. Yeah. Yeah. New record. Yeah.
What about the desire to learn more, the sutras, and actually being able to meditate,
and
reach higher levels. A certain yearning or desire.
I think that comes down to what they call aspiration, which is, basically you can say, do you find, if it's something that agitates or upsets your mind, generally it's to be avoided. Aspiration is considered something that's not agitating, but aspiring. Again, they'll probably talk about that more, but apparently they're not contradictory. I understand your question. If the aspiration comes with attachment, clinging, grasping, then certainly contentment flies out the door then. But apparently you can be contented and aspire at the same time. Another question back here? Or comment?
I think just to your point, I think that contentment and aspiration, as they're going together, you can be aspiring to understand higher levels of the teachings and at the same time be content with the level that you're at
mm-hmm.
in that moment.
Yeah. Apparently they're not contradictory. Unless we learn to live in the moment and to accept it as it is, we may never function well or feel fully alive. Contentment releases us from the restless desires, so that's what's avoided there, that drive us blindly forward. It frees us up to direct our energy in fresh and more conscious ways. So we can see, you know, contentment doesn't mean you become, again, totally passive or inert, okay, but it's helps you become actually more directed. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then the last one under how we think is delight. Anybody want to take a stab at that? What's delight? Okay, we'll pass it over there.
Is that joy?
It's very similar, yeah. Uh-huh, right. Yeah, which is considered one of the perfections in the more strictly Buddhist teachings. Yeah, it says we should take joy in virtue, joy in the virtue that others create. Okay, we can rejoice when we see other people doing virtuous actions. Delight is the delicious taste we get when something good happens. It is a tonic that relieves the pain of envy and shifts the blight of depression. We have a choice about what to feel. If we can learn to dwell on positive accomplishments, we can quickly bring more happiness into the life of ourselves and others. So it's really taking joy in virtuous actions, whether they're our own or the actions of others. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Back over here.
Would delight also include responding to the environment? For example, yesterday I saw a spider,
mm-hmm.
and her body was about that big.
Mm-hmm.
And when I looked closely, I realized that she was covered in her babies.
Uh huh.
And I delighted in it.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So that's not my actions. I mean, sure, I'm delighted
yeah.
in her actions.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. I mean, you were rejoicing in the mother practicing generosity towards their children. Mm-hmm. So that would definitely mm-hmm. qualify under Buddhist definition as delight. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Rejoicing in the good actions of others.
The good actions.
Okay.
Of her.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Ourself and of others. Okay. Mm-hmm. Any more comments about delight? Okay, so those are the four we covered today. Humility, patience, contentment, delight. Okay, positive actions of mind. Okay, if we think in that way, and this is, you know, this is something nobody's going to tell from the outside. It doesn't necessarily reflect in our actions, but if we can think in that way, that's good karma, that creates merit, that will ripen into happiness. Okay? So how we think, humility, patience, contentment, delight, creating merit, which ripens in a chaotic and nonlinear way into happiness. Okay? Any more comments before we do a brief meditation and our closing prayers? Okay. We'll just do a brief, what we call review meditation. where you just think for a moment on each of the topics that we've covered. So begin by checking your posture. And just take a few deep breaths from the abdomen with the stomach expanding on the in-breath so that your diaphragm is pulled down. And now allow your breathing to return to its normal pattern and just pay attention to the breath for a moment. And now we'll do a brief review meditation on the four guidelines of how to think. We're told to think in this way because it will lead to happiness, according to the Buddha. So first we should practice humility. So just review in your mind what your understanding of humility is. And now patience. What does patience mean to you? And next, contentment. And finally, delight. Humility, patience, contentment, delight. Four ways of thinking to be cultivated, to be practiced, even if they seem difficult at first. And why? Because we know if we think that way, we are not harming others, and we are creating the potential for our future happiness. Okay, we'll do our dedication prayers. On the pink sheet, we'll read the dedication verses from Shantideva, Long Life Prayer for His Holiness, and the prayer that spontaneously fills wishes. And then the Ken Rinpoche and Lama Zopa Rinpoche Long Life Prayer. And then we'll do the Mi'kmaq Sewe in Tibetan and chant the Green Tara Mantra seven times. May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, obtain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvests. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid, and those bound be freed. May the powerless find power, and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world. In the land encircled by snow mountains, you are the source of all happiness and good. All-powerful Chen Reizig, Tenzin Gyatso, please remain until samsara ends. Savior of the snowland teachings and transmigratory beings, who extensively clarifies the path that unifies emptiness and compassion, to the lotus in the hand, Lord Tenzin Gyatso, I beseech, may all your holy wishes be fulfilled. The one who mastered his speech at a very young age, the one with great patience who received the name Awatari, the one with great precision who spread the teaching of Lama Tsongkhapa on bliss and void. Lama, ornament of the yellow hat tradition, please remain until samsara ends. You who uphold the subduer's moral way, who serve as the bountiful bearer of all, sustaining and preserving and spreading Majjhima's victorious doctrine, who masterfully accomplished magnificent prayers honoring the three jewels, Savior of myself and others, your good disciples, please, please live long. Mi'kmaq Sewe Ter Chen. Bhaya Ganchen Ge Pe Su Gen So Kapa Lo San Drape Jabla So Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re Soha. 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 Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re Soha.